to join.
The Dollar Rush or Dollar Jack?
No, only 12 or 13 boys. We're not sure if everyone else can come back because of the Seger. So we're trying to find a way for the Chaylin to come back. It's unclear when they can. 13 boys who came and joined the beginning of last week. Okay, Boker Tov. So let's quote some Rashis from the Brachos of Yaakov to his children. So Reuven gets a little bit of a bracha, but mostly some critique. And the critique speaks to acting impetuously, rashly, quickly without thinking. Pachas kamayim al tosar. You acted impetuously, rashly, like water that overflows the bank of a river. Ki alisa mishkeve avicha, because you tampered with the bed of your father. So this is a pretty direct reference to the Bilah story. And whether you take the pasuk literally that vayishkav is Bilah, that he was over the Isser, or as most shitas in the Gemara and Shabbos assume, they just rearranged his father's marital arrangements, and he opposed the dishonor to his mother, to Leah. Either way, he intervened and invaded a space that wasn't his. And then there's an interesting phrase: "Az chilalta yitzui Allah." Yitzui means my bed, my sheets. You are mechalel my sheets. What is this phrase adding? And why such an interesting word? Normally, the word chilul means when something has kedusha, and you violate the kedusha. You mechalel chilul Hashem, chilul hekdesh. So you're taking a kedusha that's supposed to have a certain sanctity associated with it, and you're violating that sanctity. What sanctity was being violated by Reuven intervening in his father's bed? It's a strange word. So what does Rashi say? Sham Shechina. Okay, and on my bed was the Shechina. Also, shame. Sha'ala al Yitzui. I'm sorry. The name of Hashem that would go up on my bed, via Shechina. Sha'adarko lios ola al Yitzui. The Shechina would surround and hover over my bed. And by rearranging the bed, you were mechalel the Shechina. Wow, this is a very, very powerful statement. In the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, we have Rashi telling us and the Medrash telling us that the Shechina hovered above Yaakov's bed because Yaakov was an invalid, Yaakov couldn't move, he was sick in bed, he was older, so that the Shechina hovered over Yaakov. That makes sense. When, in the beginning of the Parsha, Vayishtachu Yisrael, Rosh HaMitah, he's not bowing to his bed, he's bowing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's hovering over the bed. That means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hovering over a person. In this case, Yaakov is too old to be out of his bed, so that's where the Shechina is present. But this pasuk is referring to Parshas Vayishlach. In Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov isn't in his bed. Yaakov is in his bed only one time during the day, at night, with his wife. And the Shechina is there. What does this mean? This means that in Yiddishkeit, Hashem is everywhere. And sex isn't tameh. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there on your bed, even when you're a regular, you know, healthy person sleeping in your tent with your wife. Now, there are certain halachas about what you can do and can't do in certain situations. It's not like all of halachas one flat pancake. But certainly in Yiddishkeit, we don't imagine that chas v'shalom, sex is sinful, original sin. As Christianity believes, lahavdil elav avei avdolos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you this instinct in your body in order to fall in love with a woman, in order to have children, in order to have a family, in order to have a companion. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to express that. It's part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ratzon. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is in the base medrash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is in the base HaKnesses. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina is every part of your house, every room in your house. Now, again, there are halachas which you can and can't do in each place, but this is a very, very powerful statement. In Parshas Vayechi, in the end of Sefer Bereishis, where humanity is learning about Hashem's presence, Hashem's presence is on Yaakov's bed in Vayishlach, not just in Vayechi. In Vayishlach, and Reuven should have realized that and should have been a little bit more discreet and careful about tampering with a place and arrangement that was meant to draw the Shechina. Okay? Okay, now let's move over to Shimon and Levi. Okay. They don't even get the initial praise. Shimon and Levi, Achim, they're brothers, they're good brothers, they're good teammates. Biseldem al tavonashi, aror apam kias. So Rashi highlights the fact that even though they're getting a fusillade of critique, it's not really personal. Aror apam kias, afilu b'shas hatochacha lo kilel el apam. Yaakov's not really critiquing or berating them, it's just their anger. Well, what does this mean? This sounds like Rashi's trying to defend Shimon Levi, trying to sanitize it a little, cosmetics, maybe show that Yaakov wasn't so angry. But, I mean, if I say, well, I'm not really insulting you, I'm insulting your intelligence. You're a very stupid boy. I don't really mean to insult you, I'm insulting your mind. You're very selfish. I'm not insulting you, I'm just insulting you. I'm insulting you. The answer is as follows. This is a very, very deep statement about anger. When we're angry, we are literally invaded by a foreign spirit, by something different. It's not us. When people act out of anger, even today in courts of law, I'm not saying I support this defense. Sometimes in a court of law, they're saying he acted in a fit of rage. Now, we could argue with the legality and the psychology of it, or whether the psychology should impact the legality in terms of accepting responsibility and consequences for your actions, but the psychology is really true. When you're angry, there's a foreign force that's overtaking you, and you can't think properly, and you can't speak properly, and you start sweating, and your palms start sweating, and your diaphragm rises, and your breath shortens, and that's what makes anger such a dangerous, dangerous trait. That's why the Rambam was so extreme and radical, that all the traits should be balanced and moderated, but anger has to be entirely eliminated. This is a very deep psychological Rashi. You're right. If I make fun of your intelligence or your sense of humor, I'm insulting you. But if I say you're angry now, it's a flaw for sure. But there's a disconnect between the person, how he acts when he's angry, and the person's behavior when he's not angry. And basically I'm saying, I'm not insulting you. I'm saying you have a penchant and a tendency for anger and it has to be cleaned up. But what you did when you're angry doesn't really reflect whom you are. Now the message for us is to be really careful about anger. And especially until you can eliminate it. This age of your life, there's a lot that makes you angry for all sorts of reasons. I want to go into what makes young men, 18, 19, sometimes very angry, sometimes more angry, sometimes less angry. Parents, people, rabbis, whatever. It's very hard. You want to reach the stage in life where you can eliminate anger, where you just don't get angry. It's just not something you live with. It takes a long time and a lot of hard work. But what you can do is try to control yourself not to act when you're angry. Try to tell yourself, I'm angry now. I'm being colonized by foreign government. Okay, there's some foreign government, the country of Spain is just taking me over for a couple minutes, and I'll just ride it out. And you have to really be conscious of it, because part of anger is that it convinces you can't ride it out. If you don't respond immediately, then the world's going to collapse. You don't retaliate, say something, do something. You just have to learn that in 99.9999999% of the cases, whatever actions you'll take when you're angry will be embarrassing, ineffective, insulting, escalating. And most of these actions can be better taken tomorrow. Just wait it out. Wait till you're calm. Always sleep on it. General rule in life, sleep on it in general, but certainly when you're angry. It's a very deep psychological issue. We read this strategy very quickly. It wasn't insulting them. It was insulting their anger. What does that mean? Because anger really is a different part of yourself, and you have to learn that about yourself. It's not just the Rashi teaches about Yaakov and Yaakov's delicacy and Yaakov's sensitivity. It's about us and how we view anger. Okay. One more Rashi. I'll skip over. One of the Rashis I wanted to talk about, Binyamin. Binyamin is a wolf. And v'la erev yichalek shalal. And at night, he will distribute the booty, the treasures that you shalal is war treasure. So what does this refer to? Remember, most of these brachos are referring to long-term historical prophecies, long-term historical events. So when will Binyamin take the shalal? So Rashi says as follows. It's not about the evening. It's about the evening of Jewish history. There'll be a point in Jewish history that's very dark, and it'll be like the sun has set. It'll be the Erev. And a member of Binyamin will distribute or will acquire great wealth that they didn't earn. Shalal means wealth he didn't earn, basically. I found it in war, I found it on the street. It doesn't have to be war. It could be money that came to you, dead uncle. Money that came to you without you earning it. Shalal. So when did Binyamin's descendant come about shalal? in the night. So Rashi says it's a reference to Esther and Mordechai, Ishimini. And they received the shalal of Haman's home. And Rashi quotes the pasuk. Rashi says, "V'yas hine beis Haman nasati le'Esther." Okay, why is this important? Not every event that happens in Jewish history is referenced in Berachos Yaakov. Important events. Now, this is an important event, but is it the most important event in Megillas Esther? Of all the events, I mean, it's good that it happened, and Mordechai and Esther were wealthy, but I mean, let's face it, it sounds a little bit off. But what's the most important thing that happened on Purim? Mordechai and Esther became rich. They had a lot of Bitcoin. That's what's so important for you. Yaakov to make a whole song and dance about it in the Birchas Yaakov. La'erev Yechalek Shol be two people. Two people got very rich. Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos. Who cares? Two people have a lot of wealth. No. To understand that question, answer that question, you have to understand the context of Purim. Purim happens between two major events. Between the first attempt to return to Yerushalayim after the Golus Babel, which started, but it wasn't completed. They built the foundations, but they were opposed by locals, as described in Ezra. Then about 18 years later, Ezra and Nehemiah lead that second surge, and they rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And Purim is that extra fuel to restart the process that had stalled. Now, there are many things necessary to restart that process, and this is a little bit of a Purim shoot, but you see where I'm heading with this. National pride, national energy, prophecy, all these things are necessary. But to return to our land, especially if it's going to happen through natural means, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu can lift us up in a cloud, bring us to Eretz Yisrael, build a Beis HaMikdash in Shemayim, and it's all apocalyptic and supernatural. But Hashem, in most cases, wants Jewish history to stream through politics and reality and practicality. For the Jews to make it back to Israel and build a Beis HaMikdash, what do they need? They need money. They need wealth. You have to return. It takes a lot of money to move, to get on that plane, to move to Israel, to rebuild, to resettle. And 70 years earlier, all the wealth of the Jewish people had been looted. The Jewish people were wealthy in Yerushalayim for hundreds of years. Had been looted by none other than Nebuchadnezzar. Who took the wealth from Nebuchadnezzar? Paras HaMadai, when they looted Babel. Who took the loot from Paras HaMadai? Where did Haman get his wealth? Because he lived in Paras HaMadai. So this is the gullus closing, the circle closing. And the money the Jewish people had all the way back 70 years earlier, when they lived in Yerushalayim, that was looted for them illegally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is now enabling that to return. Mordechai and Esther didn't buy a yacht. Mordechai and Esther took the money from Beis Haman and rebuilt whatever the Jewish society in Paras HaMadai, and then that money flowed back to help rebuild Eretz Yisrael at some point. People had money to move, people had money to deliver. Why am I describing a Purim story? Because it's not just a Purim story, it's also a story in our era. We've returned to Eretz Yisrael. To return to Eretz Yisrael takes a lot of ingredients, a lot of necessary ingredients. We've talked about all of them, but it also takes, look how much money has been poured in from the Jewish world over the last 80 years into this state. It is potentially the greatest philanthropic project ever known to man. You can't go through a hospital, a park, a yeshiva, a public area, a government building without seeing 50 names, and you know the names, Safra and Rubenstein, all the names that people know. And of course, not just people, but communities, sister cities, and ambulances, and Magen David Adom. And part of the major miracle of our return to Eretz Yisrael is that 80 years, 85 years after our wealth was looted, because the Holocaust wasn't only killing people and families, and it was also a tremendous amount of wealth that was looted. Now, I can't say that that wealth was returned directly to their owners. It's like the people who lost their paintings and their art and their gold returned it, but in a general sense, Baruch Hashem, Jews have been able, miraculously, to recover financial means and to be able to channel all those financial resources in part back to this country to help rebuild, help sustain our army. So what Yaakov is discussing is not just a one-off event where two people strike it rich and go off to Barbados. Yaakov is describing that even when it looks dark, but the light is right around the corner, like it was in Purim or like it was 80 years ago, Hashem will enable wealth to be returned to Jewish leaders, Jewish people, Jewish communities, so that the return to Eretz Yisrael could be facilitated. Okay, so three really interesting Rashis. One Rashi, that Hashem exists in every part of the human condition. There's no bifurcation. Your relations with your wife, they're part of your avodas Hashem. Different part, different style, different time. But it's not like, oh, taking off now from making avodas Hashem. And, Hashem, you stay in that room. I'll see you in 10 minutes. I'll see you. No. Number two, Ara Apam Kiyaz. Yes, your anger is not part of you. Learn that lesson well. Three, Esther and Mordechai achieved their wealth, not just to strike it rich and buy a private jet, but because this is the first bell in the start in the race to return to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Have a good day, everyone. Have a good day.